Amen. Thank you for spending this time with us here in the Earth Riot. The whales, we got to thank the whales. Singing with me right now in a duet. Lou Reed, thank you for The Last Great American Whale. Fiery Eagles of Justice, thank you for your whale song, which takes place in this, tragically, right over here. I can almost see it from my window. Brendan Burke on drums, Jason Candler on whatever sound you want to make, saxophone, special effects. Jason is the editor of this 30 minutes. Thank you, Jason. And Savitri D. Savitri, the news from the natural world, the fascinating findings of this Earth in 2025, 2024. Savitri is the designer of our performances at the Earth Church, 5 p.m., Avenue C, at East 3rd Street in the East Village. And Savitri has created a record, a wonderful studio-produced record. Most of the songs are her compositions. I'm Filled with the Fabulous Unknown is one of the hits. Well, we developed these songs over a two-year period at our shows at the Earth Church on Sundays, and then also as a part of the Neil Young tour this last spring. And so, this is Reverend Billy saying, I wish you safety, I wish you wildness, I wish you your own. Everybody now, Earth-a-lu-ya!
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Marn Lucas. She's talking about Bardo Project Oregon, which is on now through October 26th at the Portland Arts Collective on Harvey Milk Street in downtown Portland. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Marn.
I love Art Focus. It's been since 2013 since I was on the show.
Oh, you looked it up.
I remember it vividly. That was before I moved to New York City.
Right. So you've been back in Portland for a year, and you've had this other life. Beyond being an artist, you're this death doula. So explain what that is, and then explain what the Bardo Project is.
I like to call it an end-of-life doula. Yes, technically, I'm a death doula, but I really focus on that time nearing the end of life. And we doulas, we are a non-medical role, and we're there to advocate for the dying and their families and their needs and help them identify how they want things to go at the end of their life. So that could be things like end-of-life care planning, you know, hospice. It could be funeral planning. But a lot of times it's also vigil planning, like do you want round-the-clock companionship while you're dying? Do you want any important cultural, religious, or spiritual traditions to be carried out? You know, what do you want to happen when people enter your room if you're in hospice? Do you want your family members to take off their shoes at the door, meditate for 5 minutes, and leave their BS, so to speak, at the door before coming into your space? You know, the dying don't have a lot of agency. It tends to be a very medicalized experience in a white room. And mm-hmm. I think we end-of-life doulas want to see people have choice at the end of their lives.
That's amazing. The Bardo Project, though, is something you created to work with artists who are dying, correct?
Yes. So the Bardo Project began with the artist we're going to see here today, Chris Brunkhart. I had the idea for about 3 years before actually getting it off the ground. I wanted to collaborate with terminally ill artists to establish legacy projects. That's my community. I know a lot of artists, and I've seen a lot of folks get into, you know, bad diagnoses and, you know, have their lives be shortened. I'm a very hands-on involved person. I've worked you know, in harm reduction as a background. I like to advocate for marginalized folks. I like to see equal access to healthcare. And so this is really an extension of all the work I've done up to this point. But the Bardo Project is like, I've been working with artists nationwide for about 10 years. Since moving back to Oregon, I am shifting the focus to Oregon artists. Mm-hmm. Complicated project, you know. So trying to travel and accommodate folks who are, you know, having rapidly declining health is pretty complicated.
But the idea is for someone who knows they're dying to create some work and show it maybe before they die?
Yeah, everybody has a different idea of what legacy is. My secret agenda for the entire project is really for also the viewer to think about what their own legacy is. For a lot of folks, it's, you know, your family, your children are your legacy. I myself don't have any kids, and I'm a living, working artist my whole life. I think my legacy is the Bardo Project. I know that for a fact, that this is what I'm meant to be doing. But yeah, I like to help artists close up shop gracefully. Like, how do you want to sum up your life's work? It's not just about the end result, the artifacts, or the, you know, the body of work that someone leaves behind. The real goal is, you know, you say you're living your life, everything's fine, then you get a terminal diagnosis. Well, you're not dead yet, but you will never be the person you were before that diagnosis. So how do you make that time span in between the bad diagnosis and your death, how do you make that space as vibrant as possible?
Kind of artsy bucket list.
It is. It's absolutely.
It's people who are dedicated to art, and that's what they're going to do while they have the time.
Yeah. And, you know, these folks have declining health and lots of medical appointments, and, you know, they suffer from depression, anxiety, all kinds of things because they know that their lifespan is rapidly, you know, disappearing. Some people want to have a big art show. Some want to do a book project. Some folks just want to get all their work archived and donated to a museum or a university. Everybody has a different idea. Some artists, maybe they had commercial success and they're like, I want to do something really bold and different because they're no longer going to be dictated by the art market. And they're like, I want to just go off the walls and do something totally radical and crazy. I've had a few artists pass away before we could get the project off the ground, and that is part of the complication of doing this work. Mm-hmm.
So Chris Brunkhart, his dates were 1968 to 2016. So you were telling me he was a well-known snowboarding photographer, you know, commercial. He could shoot amazing stuff in the 90s, and it wasn't just like brightly colored sort of advertising stuff. He would take, like you said, he was the Ansel Adams of snowboard photography. So dramatic black and white mountain shots with people flying through the air. So the pictures in the show are photos from Iceland just before he died. So tell us how you met Chris and what he was like as a photographer.
I knew Chris peripherally in Portland, Oregon. We're both self-taught photographers. And I worked a lot of bars and nightclubs, and we'd see each other at various events. And he was always this incredibly kind, very quiet gentleman. But I noticed when he was driving across country to move to New York, his then partner, Zeke Martin Brunkhart, they were driving across the country so that Zeke could go to school in New York City, to graduate school. And I just thought, oh, wow, like, Chris was a gay man. He was very closeted. That sport of snowboarding was pretty macho, you know, back in those days. It was less accepting as it is now. And those gentlemen, they were all pretty young. It was a young group that grew up together. So he came out later in life, in his 40s. And I reached out to him on Facebook and just said, hey, I see you're moving to New York. I live here. I've been here for several years. Would you like to go look at art and go to some galleries or maybe some lectures? We started going to art openings together. And the moment we connected in New York, it was as if we had always been siblings. It was just an instantaneous ease between us. We could wander around the streets and take photographs and not talk and just be. Mm-hmm. And we went to all kinds of lectures. It was incredibly stimulating. And it was exciting to be with a friend who was motivated to go to the same kind of things I liked. Mm-hmm. So we did that for about a year. And then I did notice that he didn't look well. We were at an opening for the Gay Art Museum in New York City. And I said, you know, something's not right. Do you feel okay? And he said, I'm a little alarmed. I don't feel well. Something's wrong. And like within 48 hours of that, he ended up in the emergency room. It turned out to be very grave news. He asked me if I wanted the good or the bad news first. So I'm like, okay, bad news first. And he said, I have, you know, stage 4 colon cancer. He was 46 years old, mm-hmm. with a less than 5% chance at life for 2 years. So that is a terrible diagnosis. And then I asked him what could possibly be the good news. And he said, well, I'm going to be your first Bardo Project collaborator. And he knew about my project. Not very many people did. Oh, and I had been attempting to talk to places like hospice places and galleries and different institutions about like, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to collaborate with a dying artist. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no way. Like, nobody wanted to touch it. So that's an incredible gift. Like, mm-hmm. I have a little tattoo on my wrist. People always ask me why I have these numbers on my wrist. It says CB28F2. Well, that's Chris Brunkhart, and 28F2 is his favorite lens and f-stop. Oh, wow. So I actually got this after he passed. But So he took it upon himself, mm-hmm. to help. That's the biggest gift.
So you two were close like siblings, and you went with him to Iceland with his boyfriend, and you were like, go around in a minivan taking pictures, right? And then what happened?
Well, originally he did a class with Mary Ellen Mark, who's a very famous photographer in New York, and she was very impressed by his body of work and was kind of like, why are you in this class? You know, your work is amazing. You don't need to be here. And he said, well, I'm trying to make a new body of work. I'm dying from cancer. And she said, so am I. You should come to Iceland and for this class, on a landscape photography class. And he's like, well, okay, but, you know, I'm not well. And she's like, I've got everything set up. I have my own oncology care. So he was supposed to get married to Zeke in June, which they did. And then they were going to go on their honeymoon. And then they asked me to join them in Iceland, and where I would act as their driver in this. Oh. The three of us were in a van all over Iceland. And the sad news is Mary Ellen Mark died before this class could happen. And Chris still wanted to go. He said, she still has something to teach me. So we proceeded, and he was, you know, increasingly more ill. And I joined he and Zeke at the tail end of their honeymoon, and we went all over Iceland in this camper van. And so the photographs here at the gallery have been edited, retouched, and printed all posthumously. Mm-hmm. He shot all of this work, but was not able to edit this work. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time they've been seen.
Was he shooting digital?
No, these were digital, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's one called Gulf Foss Falls, and it's very stark, black and white. It's sort of shattered slate or very black, shiny rocks. And then the light, sort of white skies reflecting on the water and the wet rocks are really shiny. Then there are ropes with steel stanchions. So it's sort of a guide so you don't like fall off the edge. It looks like a volcano or a steam, you know, hot water place. And there's a lot of tourists in silhouette along the edges. And there's this one character right in the middle in front of the steam. So what do you think he wanted to see? And what do you think he wanted to learn in Iceland?
Chris was always able to make these very lonely, stark photographs. Even in New York City, where there are people at all hours of the day, he could make a landscape photo and there would be a single little figure in the landscape, and always the stark contrast of, you know, kind of the chiaroscuro of black and white here. I mean, this photo feels very ominous. You're at the edge of this enormous waterfall, yet in this photograph you cannot see the waterfall itself. Mm-hmm. You only see the mist rising and these dramatic clouds. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this like broken volcanic rock, and this figure looks like it's about to just plummet off the edge, which is, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. his life was in the balance as he was taking these photos. You can see on the back wall there's a photo of him making that photo that I took, and he's very frail, very thin, and exceptionally determined. Mm-hmm. I mean, he never minded brutal weather, cold, wind, rain, sleet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, he thrived in those conditions.
What time of year was this in Iceland?
It was August, middle of August. And so it was never above 55 degrees. We did have to stop at a lot of hot springs to stay warm.
To the left of that picture is, just says van windows. So it's shot through the van window, which is very wet. And you have this beautifully distorted image of a green mountain, a green and gray mountain with a brown floodplain in front and a twisting river, but the water drops disrupted all the shapes. Did he often like shoot through a moving, you know, car window?
I think he spent a lot of time in vans with all the snowboarding and all the snowboard trips. He traveled all over the world to very remote locations to make photographs. So I don't think he was a stranger to van life. I certainly was. But this photograph to me really feels like memory and time. And yeah, it feels very, to me, very nostalgic because it's like very, it's like a disrupted landscape. But it's not typical of the images associated with Chris Brunkhardt's work, like these kind of rocky, jagged mm-hmm. landscapes that are very stark, a bit reminiscent of Andre Salgado, who's a landscape photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit in that kind of style. So like here we have Geyser. And it's just this plume of mm-hmm. smoke erupting out of the ground and this like really like messy landscape with all sort of like sulfuric residue. Like that is sort of the drama you would expect mm-hmm. from Chris, but yeah. less so these atmospheric images.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Marn Lucas. She is talking about Bardo Project Oregon, which is on now at the Portland Arts Collective at 120 Southwest Harvey Milk Street downtown through October 26th. So, Marn, a lot of the skies in the black and white pictures by Chris Brunkhardt are sort of brooding skies. There's a lot of darkness. The underside of the clouds is very dark gray, but then there's this dazzling white on the horizons. You shot these pictures, and then you had to get them touched up and printed. You know, what did you have to add?
That was a pretty challenging process for me because Chris had a very specific aesthetic that's very different than my own. I tend to be a portrait photographer and shoot in these very natural tones. So I only had one image that he had retouched himself upon coming home from the trip. And it's these lone, tall rocks. They look like sentinels. Mm-hmm. On this landscape. It's a really powerful image. His laptop no longer works. You know, he died in 2016. All I had was a hard drive with his images provided by his husband, Zeke. So to edit this work and make just aesthetic choices, knowing this gallery space, knowing like how I wanted things to flow between, I chose to do half in color and half mm-hmm. in black and white, but to just have a visual reference to then try to match, you know, and I tried to use Lightroom as much as possible because that's what he did. Mm-hmm. And he gave me a lot of heck for not engaging in Lightroom. I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to
technology.
Hang on,
what, is Lightroom bad Photoshop or cheap Photoshop?
No, Lightroom's wonderful. It's an Adobe program that you can do a lot of adjustments in before you even open Photoshop.
Oh.
It's sort of in tandem with Photoshop. Mm-hmm. So it was intimidating, a lot of tears. I was definitely asking Chris out loud to please guide me and show me some sign of like, okay, which film setting. And some of the images I would overwork and have to just scrap it and start all over from the beginning.
So you didn't have a bunch of data about what he'd done to one photo. You were just looking at the photo and like trying to reproduce.
It was entirely by, you know, visual decision making. Mm-hmm. You know, if he were alive and to walk in the room, I want him to love this work and not be like, oh, I really, yeah, that's not how I would do the clouds. And what you said was interesting about the clouds. I feel like the clouds and the skyscape are of equal importance to what's happening on the ground in these images. I mean, it was a very intimidating process to, you know, edit and retouch. And then I had the work printed at Pushdot Studio in Portland, Oregon. And Lincoln Miller, who printed this work, he remembered having printed for Chris many years ago. So that felt like a good full circle, being mm-hmm. able to have someone who had handled his work in the past. And we chose to print it on this beautiful Hanamula photo rag Barita paper, which mimics a fiber-based print. So these are the nicest prints I've ever made. They're nicer than prints I've made of my own work.
But these are...
They're an archival pigment print, and then they're mounted and framed.
Is there glass in front of them?
There's no glass. There is no glass. There's no plexiglass. I chose to just leave the photos as they are because I'm also in a long, narrow gallery with bricks on one wall, lots of reflections. So when you document an art exhibition, even if you have a polarized lens, you're going to see all kinds of reflections. And I just thought, it's distracting. I really want each piece. You feel like you are falling into the landscape because there's no glass. It's very subconscious. You're just inside that landscape.
So you're just taking a risk that you know would put wine on there.
It was very nerve-wracking. I actually have annoying signs all around the gallery that says, please do not touch the art.
This one, grasses. Okay, so you're there in Iceland, and then he gets taken really ill. Okay, it's grass for half of the lower part of the image, very close to the lens. It's kind of moving grass. Some of it looks wet. There's water droplets on the ferns. And then in the background is this beautiful glacial valley, this sort of smooth, curving green mountain, and then a white sky. How did he make this picture?
He became terribly ill on the road trip. We'd only been driving a couple of days, and we were in the middle of nowhere to go pursue a specific waterfall. He said, I don't feel well, and we got to pull over. And he was vomiting, and, you know, trigger warning, it was blood. And he was really, really, really sick. And so we had to get emergency services in the middle of nowhere. We were waiting for the ambulance to arrive. And so it's just Zeke, his recent husband, and I, and Chris. And he was pretty angry and scared and sad. Like, all of his choices were being removed in that moment of doing this incredible legacy trip. He left us and went down into the field, and it's pouring rain and very windy. And I saw him crouch down in the grass and take a few frames. And I think he probably didn't know if he was going to survive the trip to, you know, or even make it back to the United States. I mean, we really didn't know. So this photograph for me is the most powerful image in the exhibition because it's just this kind of chaos in nature. But it's very elemental, and it's as if he's sinking into the ground. It was a pretty terrifying moment for all of us.
Down the end here, there are pictures that you took of the trip. So it gives a nice context, you know, life on the road and what he was like. And there's a nice bag of plasma or blood or something, ketchup.
These photos are sort of behind the scenes photos, and Chris actually shot a few of them. I shot some of them, but you get a sense of what it was like on the road, like shooting through the van windows, and you know what it was like. Chris has a self portrait I hung in the center of himself in that ambulance. I took that black and white self portrait. There's a picture of he and Zeke on their honeymoon in Amsterdam. A photo of Chris and I, Chris and Zeke in the hot springs. So it's just like a brief glimpse, because if you were to walk into the gallery and you see these, you know, Chris Brunkhart, Iceland, and the dates of birth and death on the wall, you would just think that this is like a, you know, a very beautiful landscape series, which it is. It's very accomplished. But you wouldn't know what it took to get these photographs to happen, that this was like a gay man on his honeymoon with his partner of many years on a bucket list trip, all rolled into one to make this legacy series. It's very, you know, it's a very powerful project.
In the back room, there's more Bardo project work. But this is your stepdad, who's a photographer. First, say what Bardo means.
Well, Bardo is a Tibetan term for this space in between death and rebirth. I'm using it metaphorically for the space between a terminal diagnosis and the end of one's life. So it's a time of introspection. It's a very big transition time. So I'm using Bardo in that sense.
And then, so you've got the little room behind the counter has, you know, a dozen color photos, probably 2 foot by 1 foot in frames with glass. And it's George Michael Stanley. 1947 to 2023. These are nature shots, right? Birds, mostly birds, right?
Mostly birds. Yeah, the exhibition so my stepdad went by Mike Stanley. He was in my life since I was 19 years old and married to my mother for 35 years. And we had planned on pursuing an exhibition for him of his wildlife photography. And most of this he shot at the William Finley Nature Reserve, just south of Corvallis. He was, you know, not a professional photographer. He was just incredibly patient and really loved being out in nature. And he died very unexpectedly in 2023. He had a massive stroke and died from complications as a result of that stroke. So I decided, like, well, now is the time to do this kind of legacy photography series. He was the kindest person. He fully lived with integrity. So even though his life was cut short at 75, he was a sailboat captain. He was a musician. He played concertina and vintage flute. He had a vintage flute collection. He was like a Renaissance. He was a Renaissance guy. He owned Mike's Bike Shop in Cannon Beach for 40 years before retiring and moving to Corvallis with my mother, Christina. Just a stellar human being and dad. And he was in my life longer than my own father, Wayne. Really special person.
So for you, as this end-of-life doula, do you look for artists who are dying and say, let's do a bardo?
I can't really approach folks. I mean, it would be very untowards and uncouth to approach folks who I learned have a terminal diagnosis. Mm-hmm. It's usually they find me on social media. I've been at this about 10 years.
You're so all over Instagram.
Some artists have found me just by Googling end-of-life doula artist. You know, I think there are more and more folks who work in creative arts who are becoming doulas. But I can't really solicit folks. But I will take this opportunity on your radio show to let folks know that if they know of someone who they think might benefit from doing a legacy project like this, I'm always seeking collaborators.
The idea is to do it while you're alive, right?
Yes.
Not just a posthumous show, but to create something and curate it with you and find a space for it.
Definitely. And then, you know, the work will live on because I will continue to exhibit that work. You can always find me through my website, which is my name, marnlucas.com.
Also, as part of this show at the Portland Arts Collective, each Saturday this month of October, you're doing a free workshop, and it's things like collage and shrine making, care and considerations for the queer community, death meditation. So it's things around death and dying, but people who are curious can come and just learn more about what you do.
Beyond having the Bardo Project be about helping artists who are dying have legacy projects, the real secret agenda for me is getting folks in my community to talk about end-of-life care planning. Mm-hmm. We celebrate birth in Western culture. We are very focused on our goals in our lives. Mm-hmm. And yet we categorically pretend that we're not going to die. It's absolutely true. And, you know, I love being in this body. I'm not ready to go either. I love being here. But no one can say when they're going to pass. But having your plans, your end-of-life care plans in order, I think it helps you live a much more peaceful present tense. It's sort of unfair to put all that burden on family and friends when there's no plan. And I have seen as a doula lots of folks not get what they need and want at the end of their lives because they don't have a plan in place. And then family members or estranged, you know, family can come in and completely alter the course of what they would like to have happen. So I'm really about wanting to see my community members have what they need at the end of life. So my kind of secret agenda is having workshops where people can come in and learn about different kinds of end-of-life care planning. Mm-hmm. If you're in a beautiful space with art, it makes it all, you know, that much, it's more gentle to be able to, like, view art and talk about legacy. But, you know, there's grief, there's loss, there's transformation, there's healing, there's burial plans, there's, you know, end-of-life directives, DNR, DNH orders, living wills. I mean, there's a lot of things to cover. You know, what kind of rituals do you want at the end of your life? You know, people don't realize that you can have folks die at home. Nothing bad is going to happen. You know, so doulas, we're here to help inform folks, like, what is the course of action that happens at the end of life? So people can come here to the gallery. Every Saturday I will be here, noon to five. Come ask me questions. I welcome them.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was artist and end-of-life doula Marne Lucas. She was talking about Bardo Project Oregon, which is on through October 26th at the Portland Arts Collective in downtown Portland. Thanks very much for coming back on Art Focus with this particularly interesting take on the art world, Marne.
Thank you very much. I love being on the show.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my whoa. Andy Warhol, silver stream, can't tell them apart at all.
Sintonizando KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM y a través de la internet en kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7.